8:14 in the morning on a Wednesday, and we now have with us on the telephone Washington 17th District State Senator Paul Harris. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How you doing?
Not too bad. How are you doing today?
Really good. It's what we call House of Origin cutoff today, so it's a big day.
Now, of course, explain for folks what that is, because there's a lot of cutoffs that go through the legislative session. And you can explain for us, you know, it goes through a process, committee cutoffs, and now we're to the point of bills on the floor, right?
Correct. So today will be the last day we'll hear Senate bills on the Senate floor. And at 5 o'clock, the last bill will be introduced. And anything that we haven't heard before 5 o'clock or that hasn't been introduced will not pass the session, at least in the Senate. Well, it won't pass the House either because it didn't get through the Senate. So, yeah.
Even though we probably also should point out here, there are bills that aren't necessarily a part of this cutoff. And there's like, you know, like especially budget bills necessarily.
Yep.
No bill is truly gone till the session ends, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. If a bill has some sort of financial ramification, could bring in money to the state, you're right, then it could go on till the very last day. But if it doesn't have any financial, if it's truly just a policy issue, then today would be the last day for the Senate and for the House.
So what are you watching today in particular? Do you have any bills that are up against this deadline?
I have one bill that is up against the deadline, but I'm probably mostly watching the bottle bill right now, which is not my bill. So the bottle bill in the Senate, we'll see if it comes out or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, explain the bottle bill for people. What we are talking about here?
I guess it just depends if you like recite. So it's charging a 10-cent fee on Oregon has this. They've had it probably the only I think there's only two states that actually have a bona fide bottle bill, and Oregon's had it the longest of anyone. Mm-hmm. And it's our neighboring state. So, like, if you go into Costco and you buy some bottled water, you're going to pay 10 cents a bottle for each one of those little bottles. And then the goal is to return those and recycle, and that's the goal. But you'll have a lot of bottles that even in your stores that you wouldn't think would be recycled, but they will be, and you'll be charged a deposit on those, and you will want to bring those back.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I'm an Oregonian, so I've lived with this my whole life. This dates back to the early 70s, this bill. And it's had revisions as time has gone on. What also is interesting with the bottle bill, though, in Oregon is that there are some things, even though this has been narrowed down over time, that get exempted from the bottle bill. Are there exemptions in this one?
There are. There are exemptions. It's modeled very similar to the Oregon bottle bill, to be quite frank. So it'll be very similar to what you're used to. And, you know, my big angst with the bill I must admit, I live at milepost one, so I live in Washington. I live right next to the 205 bridge right off of Mill Plain. I go over to Portland because there's a Lowe's over there that's extremely close to me, actually, and the closest is Home Depot. It's by the airport. I'm like 5 minutes from the airport. But boy, I tell you, in Portland, the recycling and what's going on with fentanyl to me is why I'm actually really opposed to the bill. It might work great in Hood River and some of these smaller communities, but I tell you, what I see in Portland is you give cash to anyone that's struggling with addiction, and those areas are just the lows on Hayden Island or Jansen Beach is just horrendous. My friend who's an accountant off 122nd has a bottle recycling place there. He's had to literally put fencing around it looks like a fortress because he's had so many problems. So it brings in a different problem, which we shouldn't have, but we do
now. How would, under Washington's proposed bottle bill, I mean, I've not heard a lot about this in this session, but how would they handle returns of the bottles? Because that has evolved over time in Oregon. Frankly, I can remember when I'm old enough to remember going with my mom to the grocery store, and you just handed the bottles to the clerk at the cash register. That those days are long gone. It eventually evolved to they had a place in the back of the store, and then they put the machines in, and now you've got these actual centers in place that frankly probably contribute to the problem that you are alluding to. So for Washington, correct, under this bill, how is it proposed to collect the bottles? Because that would have a lot of impact, I would think, on the problem you're talking about.
Very similar to Portland, to be so we would have kiosks, we would have bottle stores, like basically where you can come in and they'll hand you cash. We'll have places where you can drop a bag off with your ID number and it will give you a credit back on an account that you'll set up. I'm going to have an amendment that say you don't dispense any cash at all, that you're going to have a card that you're going to get, and you, that money will be put on a card and then you can go spend the money. It'll be interesting. So for a variety of ways, and there'll be certain stores that have bought in that will say, hey, yeah, I will take bottles.
Yeah,
three ways, really. Mm-hmm. So, and I think very similar to what you're experiencing probably in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the future of this bill? I mean, you just said that you kind of see both directions on this.
I know. Yeah, I do. It's one of those bills that I just go. So I would prefer it to go away. I hope we don't hear it. I got so many other issues right now that, but we'll see. So this is what I mean. Today will be a really interesting day. We'll see if that bill gets introduced, and if we're gonna have that discussion on the Senate floor. I honestly don't know. I heard yesterday that we were not. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But we did pass the WRAP Act here. So we passed the huge recycling bill. Mm-hmm. So that went out of the Senate, which I find fascinating. So we recycle right now about 60% of everything you get. Mm-hmm. This bill will take the goal of getting us to 80 to 85%, but it will change how we recycle in our entire state. So that's another interesting bill that did pass off the Senate.
So how will it change recycling, that bill? And I ask that because, you know, recycling markets have been a problem in this, and recycling rates go up when it's simple for people. If you have a bin that the garbage company provides and you put stuff in there for recycling, usually recycling rates go up, but it's when we start to require people to go back to separating things in and out, and it becomes confusing what's eligible to recycle, what's not eligible. That's when the rates stagnate or go down.
Well, that's the direction we're headed to. Mm-hmm. Recycling lots of bins. I think the ultimate goal is actually great, but the problem is it's just very cumbersome, very expensive. So you think your garbage rates are high now? This will be curbside recycling, so more trucks, which I find fascinating.
Yeah,
we do all this for the environment, and yet we'll have more trucks on, and so, and it will be probably about a 40% increase in your garbage bill.
Now you said
curbside recycling.
Well, yeah, because curbside recycling is so common that I would think most companies already offer it, because curbside recycling, you know, on the Oregon side of the river. That's just a common thing. It's been around for years.
Yeah, we don't have, even in Vancouver, we have limited, so where I'm at, mm-hmm. You're required to have garbage service.
Sure.
And so right now, mm-hmm. I have basically two bins. I have a garbage bin and a recycling bin.
Mm-hmm.
This would become far more intensified than that. Mm-hmm. So right now recycling bin, and I don't want to spend a bunch of cardboard. Yeah. Everything goes in there.
Okay.
We'd be divvying out all this stuff. And I'll be honest, Eastern Washington doesn't have this. They don't even have recycling at all. So that would take it into my smaller communities.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Even like the smaller communities on in your district here in our listening area, White Salmon, for example, they have curbside recycling. That's just kind of part. Yeah, that's part of what you do. That, it, frankly, in many cases, that's part of just the what garbage company have to do to be in business. That's what surprises me about that. These are even that bill in particular. My concern with that bill would be if we turn this into and still, like, I have a big in Hood River. This is Oregon, obviously, a big recycling bin for my house, and I put paper, cans, etc., in that bin. The only thing we have to separate out is larger cardboard, which is understandable. And that's it. And I put wheel it out every other week. Garbage goes every 2 weeks, and the recycle goes every 2 weeks in the other week, and they take it away, and that's it. And that's all it's involved. And that, to me, it's the simplicity that lets recycling rates go up and gets you where you want to go. And it doesn't, and frankly, it doesn't really jump the rates that much. I mean, I'm not paying an exorbitant amount for garbage here. So, I guess I'm a little surprised the companies there already aren't just doing it because it's good business.
I think what's actually driving it, honestly, is right now we're not recycling. A lot of our stuff isn't getting taken where it's supposed to go, and we're trying to get it to go where it's supposed to go.
And now you get into the market problem, and that's where I think the real problem comes in, is like shredded paper. There's no market for it, apparently, so now we don't recycle it. And I want to get to the budget here, so I'm going a little too far afield. I just find the subject interesting and... Yeah, you get a talk show host rolling on that, and you go. Certain deal.
It's fine. So the budget is good. We're probably on our next call, I'll know more about the budget, because we're still in the policy, which you think would be budget, but what you and I described at the very beginning. So after cutoff today, the budgets will really start getting discussed and starting to figure out how we're going to fill this gap. We released a budget yesterday. The Senate ours did. We believe the budget gap is about $6 to $7 billion, 6.4, I mean, to be exact. The Democrats think it's like 13. Well, it depends on you. 10 to 13 billion. And so it's just a different approach. One where we're trying to not raise taxes, and the other one is raising some taxes to fill in the void. So I think we'll know the exact thing what's going to happen probably here in a couple of weeks.
If you don't raise taxes to fill a hole, then obviously you're talking about reducing, cutting back, etc. Where do you make the reductions in the budget?
Well, what we didn't do, we left education whole. Education is our chief priority. And from there on, it was just basically a lot of efficiencies, working on efficiencies. And one thing we didn't do, we would say, don't give the $4 billion in raises out. I mean, that's probably the largest.
Now, when you... Are those raises, though, that are contracted? I mean, you have unions, et cetera, that I'm sure there's contracts involved here.
There are, but what was interesting is what's being proposed is to let some people go and then to give the remainder the raises, and it's a wash. So in our view, it would be to sit down with the workers and say, don't let anybody go, and let's just forego the raises, and we save $4 billion.
Mm-hmm. Of course, again, if you're in with a union contract, that's got to be a negotiation, and not everybody in government, by the way, is in a union. So, I mean, that's why I asked the question.
So that's probably the biggest savings that we had, but there's ways of doing it, and I think that would be better than doing a couple things. I have really concerns when we start looking at property taxes and giving cities and counties the opportunities of going from a 1% to a 3%, that's a concern. I mean, if I've heard anything from my seniors and new home buyers is make it more affordable, this to me is absolutely less affordable for them.
But
I mean, that's one of the areas that's on that definitely is being talked about.
Yeah, now that would be for cities and counties to go out to a vote of their public, correct?
Depends depends how it's drafted. I could be under councilmatic authority. Right now, the 1% is councilmatic authority.
Yeah.
I think it would raise it to 3% that they could have councilmatic authority.
Okay.
So I'd be concerned about that.
So that's a little, that is a little bit different. When we do talk about, because I think I'm fairly sympathetic to cities and counties and their needs. Having said that, though, we keep talking about housing affordability. And you're right, property taxes are part of that. And so that's a tough one there. But again, this comes down to, I mean, this is going to be part of a whole a budget talk, obviously. With this. I mean, there's a lot of things going to be hooked. There's a lot of stuff's going to get hooked together, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a package of considerations of how we're going to balance this budget. And so today, when we get done with policy today, I know this sounds weird, but we'll really sit down and start hammering out the budget. I'm not on Ways and Means, but they will really start delving into how we're going to do this, and negotiations will start taking place.
How many days left, by the way, in the session? You have the 105-day limit.
Monday was halfway.
Okay.
So we're right at halfway of the session.
All right, so we're about where you'd think you'd be.
Yeah, and we'll see what the federal government does. I mean, today they're announcing they're doing a massive layoff in the education system federally. That money's supposed to come to the states even more. It'll be interesting to see. But I mean, I don't want to be here for forever. But what happens federally could kick the can, and we could be here longer.
Yeah, and I know we got to run here, but I will ask, it's not just education, obviously. How much does what is happening at the federal level complicate the Washington State budget question with the hole it's dealing with?
Thus far, it hasn't. Okay. We'll see if they get into Medicare and Medicaid. We'll see if they get into the Medicaid realm. That would affect us. This education, at least what they're saying right now is they're going to lay off 1,000 people federally, but that they're actually going to flow equal, if not more, money, which won't hurt us. But it'll Medicaid would be really interesting. That would, I mean, we get Medicaid money, we get education money from the federal, so it'll be interesting to see.
If it goes into Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, that's at their own peril, to be quite honest.
I would agree.
That would be a... Yeah, that'll be interesting if that gets tried. That's not a partisan statement, by the way.
Oh no, it's not, and I don't think they're going to. But I mean, it just depends who you listen to. So you hear all these rumblings, but it just thus far nothing has. I don't think anything's affected us yet. Not anything.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, of course, I've been talking a lot of school districts on both sides of the river here on this show, and we get into budgets, and what you just mentioned with the education, that really hangs over them. With the uncertainty of it. And I ask everybody, states, counties, etc. 8:32 in the morning, Washington State Senator Paul Harris, our guest. Paul, thanks for doing this again.
Absolutely. Good talking to you. Thanks so much.